It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. What do you think makes the perfect lawn? Is it lush Kentucky bluegrass as far as the eye can see? Well, my next guest, Kamiran Cheyenne, would beg to differ. Kamiran Cheyenne is the director of the University of Northern Iowa's Center for Energy and Environmental Education. He's also the driving force between the new Good Neighbor Iowa program. Hello, Kamyar.
Hello. Great to be with you.
Well, welcome back to the show. And tell me what the Good Neighbor Iowa program is about.
Okay. Good Neighbor Iowa basically addresses a cultural issue, a cultural problem, in the same way that kind of smoking was a cultural issue, where you would go to any public place, people were smoking. We then learned from public health sciences that that wasn't a good idea. And we then acted on this scientific knowledge and improved our health. And now we can all kind of happily go to a restaurant and a public place and not be exposed to secondhand smoking. Well, Good Neighbor Iowa addresses that when it comes to lawn care. It involves, you know, a team of students at UNI and many community partners across Iowa planned and researched and, you know, are implementing this public education campaign to encourage school districts, park directors, childcare centers to consider diverse lawns and not expose children to the health risks that lawn weed killers pose. So that's now, really the idea.
Yeah, in comparing the kinds of chemicals that are used on lawn to smoking cigarettes, I think there are some people who are going to be saying, wait a minute, that, you know, smoking cigarettes, that causes cancer. Secondhand smoke causes cancer. We know that. So how serious do you feel this issue is, the kinds of chemicals that are being put on lawns? Would you actually, do you feel like they are as dangerous as cigarette smoke?
Well, you know, we kind of, what compels our work is a very significant body of evidence from public health sciences. A key report from American Academy of Pediatrics cites a whole lot of studies, and the conclusion of that report is that children's exposure to pesticides should be limited as much as possible. And we have University of Iowa professor of pediatrics advising us. We have several physicians and public health professionals. So the body of evidence, and in fact, on every container of pesticide or lawn, pesticide, by the way, is a general term that includes herbicides, insecticides, fungicides. But most people apply weed killers to their lawn. And the body of evidence that they are harmful to children is sobering. It really is. There's significant evidence that we ought to stay away from these. And kids should not be exposed to them because of their unique vulnerabilities and frequent hand-to-mouth behavior that can expose them to significantly more exposure than adults.
You're also concerned about pets tracking these chemicals into our homes and about the greater impact on wildlife and the environment, right?
Totally, totally. So there's three bodies of evidence. You know, we have to go kind of in our work at the university, we have to, it's all based on evidence, based on science and evidence. So really, we think this is important. We need to change our culture so that we're not exposing children. We protect child health. We protect water quality, because there is very compelling evidence that some of what we apply to our lawn does end up in local streams. And the third body of evidence is that it protects biodiversity, because when we have a more natural lawn and we have diversity of plants, because they provide habitat and food for pollinators.
So you're trying to broaden the conversation about our lawn care habits. What are you hoping to accomplish? I mean, what do you want to see people doing?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, we're hoping everybody does that, but we're right now we're partnering with school districts, parks, and childcare centers. Those are the main entities. And then we have institutions like, the Des Moines Blank Park Zoo has committed to not spray their lawns, and the Czech and Slovak Museum in Cedar Rapids. And I'll tell you some of the... So that's what we're hoping to see. We're hoping to see school districts and work with them. We want to assist them to commit to not spraying the general turf areas around schools and in parks where kids are with weed killers. And so that's, and we have the, our approach has been work with these entities, and we already have had major commitments, Iowa City Community Schools, Waverly Shell Rock Community Schools, and parks. And so that's our approach, is saying, well, these prominent entities in Iowa are acting on this body of evidence, and they're changing their practices, and they're managing lawns, they're saving money, and everything looks fine. So that's kind of the approach that we're hoping all across Iowa. It's a long-term initiative, and it takes time.
And a lot of groups are pushing for more diversity in our lawns for a lot of reasons, for pollinators, for example. And a lot of groups are saying, hey, plant native plants in your lawns, landscape in a different way. But you're not necessarily saying that. You're just saying stop the spraying.
So we're saying, we're kind of trying to be very practical. We're working with park directors and school districts that mow a lot of areas. So in the first step is we're saying, look, if there's an area that you mow, there is no reason to spray. Just keep all the other practices you're doing. And lawn care companies, too, they can provide basic, aeration, overseeding, do everything except remove weed killers from the equation. But as you mentioned, yes, totally, it's very appropriate for certain lawn areas to be planted into native plants. That's a lawn reduction strategies that helps in certain situations. Yeah, totally.
Now, you mentioned a number of communities already getting involved in Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Cedar Falls. Dubuque is one of the communities that is also getting involved. And with us on the line is Corey Burbach, Sustainable Community Coordinator for the City of Dubuque. Hello, Corey.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And tell me about the approach that Dubuque is taking.
Yeah, so in Dubuque, we've been working with CAMYAR on an integrated pest management plan. And that's really, it's our strategy to figure out how can we reduce the amount of pesticides that we use in our public spaces. So we started with parks because that's where people interact with most. And then we're really looking at trying to figure out what can we do instead of using chemicals. So we prior to doing this work, we typically didn't spray in our general turf areas anyways. But we're looking at things like line trimming or overplanting or other strategies that we can use so that we aren't exposing the public to those chemicals in our parks.
Now, I can also imagine that people who live next to one of these parks who maybe think that a Kentucky bluegrass lawn should be pristine, they may not like the idea of dandelions in the park, that kind of thing. Have you had pushback?
That's been part of the conversation that we started with. We have a reputation. I think we have a fantastic parks department who does a wonderful job maintaining our open spaces, and Dubuque's really proud of that. And when we talked to our city council and the public about this, we said, look, this is a values conversation. There's an aesthetic value in our public parks that we want to maintain and make sure that we're still maintaining those spaces, and people don't think, well, they just stopped doing their job, right? But there's also a public health impact. And so for us, we've had a really productive conversation with the public, especially some of our next-door neighbors, and said this isn't an all-or-nothing campaign for us. There's a few instances where we know we still need to use chemicals to treat things.
Golf courses, for example.
Exactly. That's a great example. But generally, dandelions in our lawn and our parks are probably an okay thing.
Have you had any pushback from your maintenance people who now feel like maybe they're going to have more work to do?
Great question, too. We're trying to make the best use of our resources that we can, both financially and staff hours. And so we committed, we have 42 parks in the city of Dubuque, plus some bigger open spaces. We committed to starting with 10 of those parks being completely pesticide-free. So those parks, we've committed no pesticide use. We've also said we will not use pesticides in any of the mulch around the actual playgrounds, because as Kamyar mentioned, we're really thinking about how people interact in those spaces. For our staff, that's meant a few more staff hours, but we've tried to really talk to them about the public health impact for the public and for our workers, quite honestly, that are having to use those chemicals. We don't want to expose them to that. And so it's a give and take. We're talking about, well, if we use more hours, for hand weeding or something like that, can we transfer some of those spaces over to native planting so maybe we don't have to maintain them at all in the future? It's really kind of opened a new conversation for our staff.
Mm. And you spent a lot of time planning for this. How are you communicating it to the public? Because that has to be part of the plan as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this conversation in Dubuque, I have to give a lot of credit to a group of residents who showed up at a city council meeting and said this was a priority for them about a year and a half ago. They came to the city council and asked us to develop an integrated pest management plan. One of their requests was that we significantly reduce or eliminate pesticides. Another one was that we really increase transparency to the public about how we do things. And I think that's a great point. Children are one of our target audiences. Another one of our audiences are folks that have chemical sensitivities of some kind, whether it's allergies or something more severe. And we want to make sure, from the city's perspective, that when we are having to use chemicals, that we let those folks that it's really going to impact their health know what we're doing. So in those 10 pesticide-free parks that we have now, they're really well signed, so you can see when you enter that pesticides are not used there. We've also created an online notification system. So if folks are thinking about maybe taking their kids to the park this weekend, they can sign up for an email notification that will let them know what areas of the city we are currently using pesticides in. So if it's a health issue or just a personal preference, they can avoid those areas in those time frames.
Kamyar, as you're approaching communities and organizations about this idea, you've had some tremendous success. You've also been probably turned down by a number of people. What kinds of reasons are our organizations giving you for not wanting to get involved?
Well, we just have begun this work, and we're contacting cities, we're contacting school districts, and we're going to have a whole approach to kind of statewide with childcare centers. So we've had really mostly very positive responses. Quite a few cities are saying, well, you know, most of our parks we don't actually spray. We say, great, you're already leading, great. And so they we document that, and we just say keep that going. And then other schools and other entities, they're considering. So it's something, resources that we provide them. For example, one of the areas that's kind of challenging is athletic fields. And we will bring experts who from around the country who are taking care of athletic fields with hardly any herbicides, and so that schools learn. So we're going to have kind of professional development workshops around the state to help communities see that this is all possible, and enable them to, as you said, you know, how would a school grounds manager talk to the neighbors who are concerned about a few dandelions? Well, we can help them have talking points, and all the literature, medical evidence that we've assembled. I think most people really aren't aware of these amazing, body of evidence that should convince people that this is not something healthy. In the same way that it took a while to convince people that there was a secondhand smoking problem. And there's a lot of drift issues in town when somebody sprays and it kind of everybody smells it, and there are those things. So yeah, it's a campaign that's just beginning, and we're delighted that so many cities and communities and park managers we've received mostly very favorable responses.
Is there a main challenge that you see in your future that you'd really like to take on, maybe university campuses, for example?
yeah, that's a great one. And again, it's a matter of time. And I really think our approach has been the only way this is going to succeed is through local leadership. And And really, the city of Dubuque, city of Iowa City, city of Cedar Falls, I mean, these are all these entities that already have committed and are really making a very strong push in that direction and are studying it. That's our strategy. I think in time, the Regent universities and other colleges will realize that this is just a normal thing. It's okay. And we can communicate why we're doing this with our with everyone.
Well, you mentioned people managing athletic fields with minimal chemical inputs. Is there a halfway here, or is it all or nothing?
No, it is totally, totally, there's a spectrum. Yeah, totally spectrum. I mean, the purpose of our campaign is not to say, well, never pesticide ever, you know, nothing like that. We realize that there are situations where they're needed, but the cosmetic uses around general turf area, there really isn't any justification. And that's what pediatricians are saying. And that's what we need to really keep coming back to the science, to the body of evidence that we have to pay attention to, because that's what science is for, to make us live better and avoid hazards. And so yeah, we think it's totally possible for a school, for a park to basically not apply at all. Always leave the room for those rare situations, a public health emergency or some other situation. Maybe there is a patch of poison ivy somewhere in the woods that need to go or something like that, which is different than just broadcasting all over the place.
You really started your push about a week ago, a little over a week ago on Earth Day. Very quickly, in 15 seconds, what does the future hold?
Well, we hope we'll have many partners around the state. We're looking for local champions, residents who can connect us to their community leaders. And we're just hoping to get this going with many partners around the state.
Kamyar and Cheyenne, thank you so much for talking with me.
Great to be with you.
And Corey Burbach, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Corey Burbach is Sustainable Community Coordinator for the City of Dubuque, one of the communities that's involved in the Good Neighbor Iowa program that is an initiative of UNI's Center for Energy and Environmental Education. Kamyar and Cheyenne is the director of that center. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.